Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, journalists, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate.
Welcome to The Margaret Cho, Mortal Minority. Today, we're talking about the recent stabbing of two elderly Asian American women in San Francisco. Also, our historic event is the life and controversial death of Dr. Hang S. Nor, a survivor of the Khmer Rouge and the first and only actor to win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. My guest today is comedian and actor and writer and just all-around great, great, great person, Irene Tu. Thank you, Irene, for doing my podcast.
Thank you for having me again, Margaret.
I'm excited. How are you feeling with everything happening? Happy AAPI Heritage Month, and how's it going?
I know, it's such a tongue twister, number one. I wish we had a shorter acronym for our Heritage Month, but it feels good. I'm just scared because everything's opening back up, and I don't remember how to be a person in society.
I know. It's weird. Have you done comedy yet? I mean, out in a show?
Mm-hmm. I've been doing outdoor shows for a while now.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I just started doing some of the indoor shows because I got vaccinated.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. And, you know, they're like all spread out. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody, I mean, I've done outdoor shows. I think it's really fun, the outdoor shows. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done an indoor show, although I have been vaccinated, so... It's weird because it was like a learning curve to try to remember how to do comedy in the first place.
Oh, yeah. My first set back when I did an outdoor show, I just completely forgot how one of my jokes went that I've been doing forever. Just no idea.
I have no idea of so many things and I'm super confused about so many jokes. But at the same time, it's like, okay, it's good because now I can rethink some jokes and like start afresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that opportunity of a reset, but I also agree it's hard to go back into real society.
Yeah. And now I don't know if I'm supposed to hug people again. You know, people like come in and I'm like, wait, don't touch me. Oh, I guess it's okay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really like touching anyway, I think.
Yeah. I mean, me neither. But I'm like, oh, I guess we should go back to the handshaking and the hugging. I don't know.
Well, I hate handshaking. I'd much rather hug.
That's so funny. I would rather fist bump, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whatever it is, it's like, I did appreciate the physical distance of people. That was kind of cool. And I don't mind this sort of like social distancing and being at home. Like, I'm kind of like very learned to be okay with that. With the exception of not doing stand-up, everything else was kind of, it's kind of good.
Yeah, I mean, as an introvert, it's kind of nice. You know, yeah. I don't feel like pressured to go to a party or network or, you know, any of that. I'm just like, oh, I'm home. And, you know, if I have to go do a show outside, I'll do that. And then I just chill. Like, no one has to bother me.
Yeah, which I definitely like. I mean, I think that comedians, actually, most of us are introverts.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
You know, it's always hard work if you're like out on the road to like get a comic to go do something with you.
Yeah. I know, sometimes I'll go on the road with like headliners and then you feel like you're supposed to, you know, like hang out with them the whole time. And you both realize, oh, neither of us really want to. You know, you want to hang out in the green room and then kind of do your own thing during the day.
Yeah, I go out on the road usually with people I really like. Mm-hmm. So it can be super fun, but it's also draining. I think that like also doing comedy itself is like a draining thing, so that you want to reserve your energy for shows. Like, I don't feel like I can do anything before I go on, you know, like, even if I have like a whole long day before a show, I don't feel like I can, like a Saturday. Friday, we're usually traveling.
Right.
Thursday, you're traveling and then you do the show and then it's like kind of like you get all this like energy saved to go on stage, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've done shows like on Saturdays where like I'll hang out with people during the day and I'll do the show and I just feel terrible doing the show because I've kind of wasted all that energy during the day.
Yeah, it takes a lot. So people don't understand how hard.
They don't get us. Like, we're brave.
What do you do? Like, I usually kind of half watch TV. I watch TV and like listen to a podcast and look at Pinterest at the same time.
You mean like during the day or before bed?
During the day. Not before bed. Usually I try to put all the devices away around 9 o'clock.
Oh, that's really good. I'm really bad at that. I'm the one who's like on my laptop, the TV's on in the hotel room, my phone's next to me till like 2 a.m.
Yeah. The only device that I try to look at is my Paperwhite Kindle.
Oh, okay. That doesn't even really count.
No light emerges from it.
Yeah. And it's a book.
It's a book and it's usually like a really boring book. So I'm like falling asleep. That's why I try to read something like Holistic Medicine for Pets before I go to bed.
Just imagine you staying up till 5 a.m. reading Holistic Medicine for Pets.
You know, it's really intense. Like, cause I was like trying to like feed my pets raw.
Uh-huh.
I was going to be like so lesbian about my whole like life. And then I was going to feed my pets raw. And then I was going to practice holistic medicine and all the shit. So, but what I learned about doing that was that those books will make me go right to sleep. Chinese Medicine for Dogs. I'll go right to sleep.
I didn't even know that was a book.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's like, and then, you know, if you get that book, then it's like the other books that you might like. Vegan Chef. Other books you might like. It's all books about like dogs in the army and how to feed your cats raw.
Dogs in the army?
Yeah, there's like a lot of like military dog books out there. There's a whole bunch.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, those books will put me right to sleep.
That's so funny.
But that's what I do.
I bet Gwyneth Paltrow has like a remedy for you.
Maybe like a sleeping memory. I can't look at my phone when I go to sleep because I'll just stay up all night.
Yeah, I know. I meant more like a holistic thing for your dog. I bet she has something.
I bet she has some kind of like $400 jade roller for my cat's
to like
face.
Roll your cat.
So I could roll my cat or roll my dog or a gusha. Like jade implement so I could scrape the cat butt on it. Like, can my cats get shit all over their butthole? Like, they're just so cute, but they just really get shit everywhere.
Oh, no.
When they eat raw, they just get shit everywhere. I mean, I love them, but it's very is missing.
I don't think I knew you had cats.
I have two new cats in the pandemic. They're fairly new. I got them in February, early part of February, and I really love having cats. I didn't realize how much I would love it.
That is so gay of you, Margaret.
It's like so lesbian, but now it's like they're going to be holistic.
Yeah.
And we're going to practice Chinese medicine. But yeah, AAP, I want to say AARP.
I know. It's just like a bad collection of letters in a row.
AARP. So in this podcast, what we're doing is we are taking a modern subject of an Asian American crime. There's so many every single day.
It's a nightmare.
Which is one of the reasons I can't look at my phone, because I every day there's something else.
Oh, yeah. I can't check the news anymore. Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. And then we will juxtapose it with a historical crime against an Asian American. So the modern one we're going to talk about today is, this happened on Market Street in San Francisco, where I met you. I met you in the Lower Haight.
That's true. Yes. But we did meet in San Francisco.
We met in San Francisco. And so this happened on Market Street, which to me is like so horrible. Okay, so this is from The Guardian, where two women are in the hospital after they were stabbed at a bus stop in San Francisco in the latest attacks against Asian Americans nationwide since the start of the pandemic. The women, one 63 and the second 84, Chui Fong Eng, were waiting for the bus on San Francisco's Market Street early Tuesday evening when a man stabbed them each multiple times. A woman working at the flower stall nearby who witnessed the attack told Associated Press that she saw the man walk away like nothing happened. The police said the 63-year-old victim sustained non-life-threatening injuries, while the 84-year-old woman was literally being treated for life-threatening injuries, but her medical status had been downgraded to non-life-threatening. The grandson of the 84-year-old woman told a local news station that his grandmother was independent, very headstrong. If she has to do something, she's going to. And the family was told the knife nicked her lungs and ribcage. But I saw, did you see the x-ray of her lung? Because she got her lung was punctured.
Oh my God.
And
no,
you
I didn't
see the knife, like it's so far deep in her ribcage, in through her lung. It's really a nightmarish x-ray. So horrifying. So this is from NPR. The SFPD arrested 54-year-old Patrick Thompson around 7 p.m., 2 hours after he allegedly stabbed the two women. Police say he faces 2 counts of attempted murder and 2 counts of elder abuse. Investigators have not yet ruled the attack a hate crime.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Why is it a question that it's, I mean, if you're attacking two Asian women, it's like a, you know, it's
that's hate. Not random.
It's not random, and it's crazy. So on the GoFundMe, the granddaughter, Victoria Eng, said her grandmother is recovering well after surgery. These Asian hate crimes need to stop, she wrote. San Francisco is my home and my grandma's home. We need to feel safe where we live, not in constant fear. So the SFist says that Patrick Thompson has a long history of both mental illness and violence. And he was successfully completing the city's mental health diversion program and was living on his own. But before that, he had been arrested for a 2017 stabbing with scissors.
Oh my God.
And sent to a mental health facility in Napa because he was unfit for trial. So he appeared in court for arraignment Monday and remained silent. I mean, it's, but the whole thing is like, the way that they're framing that, it's like, okay, yes, he's mentally ill. You would have to be mentally ill to attack anybody, but this is clearly a hate crime.
Oh, yeah,
That to me is so crazy. It's such a hate crime, and, you know, it's because it is, like, exactly who we're talking about when we talk about these crimes. It's older Asian women.
Yes. I mean, that's been the trend. It's just older Asian women and some men.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how they could be like, ooh, maybe it's not a hate crime.
That's the weirdness to me. Like, why do we have to fight for the right to be hated?
Yes.
You know, like, that seems to be, like, what we're fighting for, in a sense, is the right to be seen as somebody who is a victim of racism. We have to fight for that still.
Right. Well, it's because, you know, some people will lump us with like white people, or, you know, they never know what race we really are. Even though we're Asian, it's like they don't know if to lump us in with like people of color or like with white people, you know?
Yeah, it's a continual, a structural problem in mm-hmm. the way that we view Asianness and race and Americanness. And, you know, this crime really upset me because it's also San Francisco, which, and so many instances have happened in San Francisco and Oakland in the Bay Area.
Which is like, I mean, so many Asian people.
There's so many Asian people.
That's crazy. Like, it's just happening in broad daylight with all of these Asian people.
And then I'm like, what bus were they waiting for? So if it's Market Street.
I know. Also, Market Street's like pretty busy.
Market Street's very busy. So, you know, there's a lot of people. I mean, it sort of depends on where you are on Market Street.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, there. You know, there's like kind of one area, it's like a lot of tourists. So that's around Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go up and then it gets kind of like to the Tenderloin area.
Right.
And then it gets into the Castro.
Right.
So I couldn't visualize exactly where it was, but, you know, yes. In all those sort of areas, there's a lot of people.
I know. That's the other thing. It's just like, oh, we're all like, hey, like, stop Asian hate. But how are these crimes still happening? Aren't there people around?
Yeah. I mean, it's, to me, I think it's like, I don't understand why you wouldn't immediately jump up to, you know, physically defend an old Asian, like, an old Asian lady getting stabbed. It's like, so two of them.
Yeah. It's so sad because it's like, what did they do? They're just trying to take a walk and get some groceries. Like, why are you attacking them?
I know. It's really, I mean, and you know, it just doesn't seem to get any better. And this is one of the reasons, yeah, I can't look at my phone, especially at night, because I will go on Instagram and I'll go to like Dion Lim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a journalist in San Francisco who's reporting a lot of the stuff. Mm-hmm. And Sifan, who's in New York, is also a journalist, is reporting a lot of the stuff and kind of giving it a real signal boost.
Right.
But it has all of the coverage. And I mean, I'm really glad for them because they're really kind of putting this problem out there and getting a lot of pickup from news sources, other news sources, but it doesn't seem to be alleviating the situation. It just seems to be getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like we're all doing like a public awareness campaign and yet nothing has happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're trying to pass a law, or they might have passed a law to make it, you know, the hate crimes. But it just seems like nobody's really doing anything. They're just like, oh, but like, stop doing it. But then nothing's being done.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost as if the shame against Asians or the shame against Asian racism is somehow not projected in the way that we have shame against people who are racist in general.
Mm.
You know, like there's something about the shaming of Asian racism isn't particularly prevalent, you know, like it's a weird, it's kind of like this one thing that I don't know, Tony Hinchcliffe.
Oh, I was going to bring that up. I was going to be like, did you see the news? Yeah.
I don't know who's comedy. I just know him. I was like, oh, somebody's opening for him. Like somebody's like working with him, or, you know, he seems to be like a, mm-hmm. somebody that worked in the Punchline. He's like a Punchline comic or something.
Or I know he was at the store a lot. I also don't know him personally, so.
Yeah, I don't know him. But I'm like, well, now there's sort of an uprising of people kind of putting his name out there as somebody that's, you know, being Asian racist, being racist against Asians. But it's like, there's not a sense of shame about it.
Right, right.
You know, it's just kind of matter of fact. Like, oh, he doesn't like Asian people.
Or I've read where people are like, yeah, he's always been racist. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's it?
It's like, I mean, you know, I don't know. But there's not like a sense of outrage when people are racist against Asians that there is for anybody else. And it's weird. It's like, why do we still bear the brunt of racism yet get none of the sort of social situations that would shame people who are racist, that would exclude people who are racist? Because we have a society that roundly really, really shames racism.
Right. Except when it comes to Asians.
Except for Asians. It's like, well... It's like really weird.
It's really weird. I mean, I think they just don't think it's that bad. Or I think it's just because we're seen as like so successful in a way. You know, that's like, oh, Asians are smart or Asians are doing well in some way. So when people are being racist to us, they're like, well, I mean, they're still doing fine. So who cares? You know?
Yeah. Which is never... I mean, it's like, where are we doing? I mean, I'm not really sure about that either.
Right. I mean, I don't think that's true, but I feel like that's what the sentiment
is. Yeah, I know.
That's
what the sentiment is. But it's like, where do they get that idea from? It's just, it's so, so infuriating. But, okay. So that, in the, at the end of the show, we're going to talk, we're going to give a shout out to these women who have a GoFundMe. They're raising quite a lot of money, which is great. That's the one good thing, if anything is good, is that the community, the Asian American community and our allies have really come together around a lot of these crowdfunding, GoFundMe things and really done a great job of having some sense of unity and really being behind these causes. So I'm grateful for that. But we're going to take a short break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about a really important person, I think, whose story's quite forgotten, but he's really amazing. We're going to talk about the life and death of Dr. Hong S. Nguyen.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're back. Now, I was trying to think, this story really kind of struck me because of when Yunya Jung won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in Minari. The only other time that I'd ever seen an Asian actor win an Academy Award was Dr. Hong S. Nguyen for his work in the movie The Killing Fields. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't. So, yeah, they sent me the info and I was like, oh, I have to watch this movie. I've never seen it.
Well, it's on Tubi, which is the very best streaming service. It's free. Tubi is my favorite streaming service. Now, you may have to watch a Febreze ad or two, but let me tell you, it runs the gamut of like all the movies that you can't watch anywhere else. It's like, Tubi is like the kind of place where you would go watch like VH1 kind of like shock documentaries from the 2010s about how actresses are too thin.
Uh-huh.
And like extreme dieting. And then also you can watch really trashy movies that they would never have in any other streaming service. They have a movie called Snuff, which is, it was like this crazy, like, shock movie, gore movie. It's trashy. It's from, like, the 70s. And it's all about people who kill people and then make a movie about it. It's not very good, but it's one of the things you can watch on Tubi. But they also have really great movies.
Uh-huh.
Like... The Killing Fields.
Okay, I have to watch. It's free, right?
It's free.
Yeah, okay.
You will have to forfeit maybe about 2 minutes of Febreze ads.
Okay.
I mean, Tubi is free. It's free on your any device and on your TV, but you cannot, there's no premium Tubi. There's no way to bypass the ads. And if you try to fast forward, they'll rewind and you'll have to watch them again.
Wow.
So,
okay.
But it is the number one streaming service. Because I'm the kind of person that I would spend like hours in a Blockbuster looking for the movies that nobody's going to watch.
Uh-huh.
And watch them. There's a lot of like Jean-Claude Van Damme content on Tubi. And just a lot of weird, stupid horror movies that, nobody ever remembers, but I love. So anyway, The Killing Fields is on there.
Okay.
It's actually a really great film. And so Hangis Noor won the Academy Award in 1985 for portraying Dithpan, who was a real journalist in Cambodia. And it's so much of the history of Cambodia and Khmer Rouge, it's just so terrible. And it still lives on, you know, and that there's like a terrible problem with landmines there that still exist. You know, just the human rights violations just go beyond anything that is just, it's just horrifying. And the movie is interesting because it could be seen as almost like one of those like white savior movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like Sam Waterston's going to go in and he's going to like save all of the, you know, people in Cambodia. But
right.
It actually, Dr. Hangis Noor's character, Dithpan, is more of the hero. And he's begging for the life of Sam Waterston. He's begging for the life of John Malkovich. So it's actually kind of an inverse of the white savior sort of paradox in war movies that we have about Vietnam and Cambodia and back then. So it's an impressive film. And I actually knew Spalding Gray. Spalding Gray is in the film.
Okay.
He was the very first celebrity to come see me do comedy.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Which is really cool. And this was like in the probably late 80s. So that was in San Francisco. And so I was like excited because he's in the movie. And he's somebody that is very interesting because he wrote a show, a one-man show about it called Swimming to Cambodia, which is all about his experience shooting there and kind of what he went through. And he passed away under some mysterious circumstances. And I think that people think that maybe he had committed suicide, but nobody's exactly sure. He's disappeared. And I ended up doing a show sort of to benefit his foundation. But Dr. Hangis Noor also has a foundation, which after he won the Academy Award portraying this incredible story of survival in Cambodia, he went on to kind of like become this very, very big star. So he was a medical doctor in the 70s, and he was living in Phnom Penh with his girlfriend, and he was like, you know, they were doing well. Like he was a successful gynecologist, and he said he had a Mercedes, his girlfriend had a Mercedes,
both
had drivers. Like, it was just, like, a very, like, classy, modern society.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Khmer Rouge took over, he didn't feel threatened because he thought, oh, well, they're not going to do anything because I'm a doctor. You know, they need the doctors.
Right, right.
But what it ended up happening is they were killing anybody who had any kind of education, like anybody who was sort of in that sort of upper class, anybody who was considered like educated, wealthy, like middle class and upper, they were just murdering everybody. And so he had to just not say he was a doctor.
That's so crazy.
It's like so crazy to the point of like, he's in the operating room operating on somebody. And they come in and they're like, where's the doctor? Because they're going to kill the doctor.
Oh my God.
And he's like, oh, he went that way.
Oh my God.
It's like, we don't know. He just went that way. Like you just missed him. Stuff like that. Like that's like so horrible.
Wow.
And to like, be put into this prison camp and be tortured and, you know, be tortured under that sort of like that line of, are you a doctor? Are you a doctor? And he talks about being in actual Chinese water torture, which I never understood what it was. Do you know what it is?
No, I don't know what that is.
It's an ancient torture method. I guess it's Chinese. I don't know. Hangis Noor is half Khmer, half Chinese.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm also Chinese too. I know
yeah.
You're Chinese.
Oh, I'm Chinese, but I don't know all our water torture methods, so.
I know. I'm Korean. But also Chinese. And I didn't know about the water torture. I didn't really understand what it was. Hangis Noor explains that what they do is they put like wood, like planks on the sides of your head, and then they put like nails in it so you can't move your face, so that if you move your face at all, you'll get like, pierced with the,
oh my God,
the nails. So, and then they hold your head still and they drop water onto your forehead. And he said the first 1,000 drops are no problem. Like, it's like not a big deal. But then it's 1,001. He said that 1,001 drop put him in a coma. He's like,
what?
You just go crazy. I think because of the constant, like, the dropping of the water on your head, it just becomes so painful. And then you can't move your face because you're immobilized by the nails. Like, it, the way he describes it is so horrifying. And for whatever reason, he survives this kind of torture for 4 years in this camp.
Oh my God.
And he manages to leave. Like, the soldiers, who are mostly like children, you know, Pol Pot, who was the leader of this terrible Holocaust, really kind of gave a lot of positions of power to very young kids, who is giving guns to kids and sort of like forcing them to do all this torture and madness. And so finally, Dr. Hangesnor escapes. He's able to escape. He not physically escape, but he's able to be let go. There's something he says, like, she manages to convince these young soldiers, like, you know, you could kill me, or you could let me go. Whatever it is, it's in your hands. And with that, they let him go. So he goes back to his wife. They were never actually married.
Okay.
His wife, Hui. They were never actually married, but he believes that they were spiritually married because, you know, they never had a ceremony, but they had so much duress. And she was pregnant with their child, and she was giving birth, and he was unable to give her a cesarean section because he was unable to reveal that he was a doctor.
Oh, my God.
And so she ended up dying in his arms. Like, because he said that either she would die, if I had helped her, we would all be dead. Not only if we'd be dead, they would have killed my family, her family, everybody that we knew. You know, so it was such a hugely terrible thing to be a doctor, be educated, that he couldn't even save his wife. So he was mortally wounded by
this terrible thing,
that he couldn't save his unborn child and his wife. So it's a very traumatic thing, you know, and he talks about this. So after the film came out, he did a lot of lecture tours, and a lot of this information is coming from a film by author Arthur Dong. It's a beautiful film called The Killing Fields of Dr. Hangesnor. It's kind of like he would give his lectures. He would go on a lecture tour after and go speak to universities and talk about his experience. All the way from coming from this Holocaust, surviving it, and then coming to win the Academy Award, which is an incredible story. And in Hollywood, too, where they, at that time, you know, think about 1985.
I was like,
what's interesting about 1985 is there was Pat Morita was also up for an Academy Award for the same award for Karate Kid.
Wow. Yeah, I was just like, I'm surprised they didn't just get like a white actor to play his part in this movie.
You would think. Well, the actor that gives Hangesnor who presents it is actually Linda Hunt, who played Billy Tan in the movie previous, who won for Year of Living Dangerously. So she was playing white man.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was like, I'm shocked he got an Oscar.
I think because what you see in the film is such a beautifully true portrayal of the real pain of the situation, because it was a lived experience that was so true in his body that you could really see it on the screen. Even in a very glitzy, kind of very big budget, which is a big budget film.
Mm-hmm.
The Killing Fields was a huge movie. It was actually written by Bruce Robinson, who wrote and directed a movie that I really admire called With Nail and I, which is all about him getting... the story comes from him getting sexually harassed by Franco Zeffirelli on the set of Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a different situation. And I wrote something about the movie in the upcoming book about it, but it's, so there's a lot of like really deep sort of like Hollywood roots in this movie. And for somebody like Hang Us Nor to come in and lend such realism to such a Hollywood movie is really, it's really tremendous. And it really speaks to how amazing he was and his life story was. So he ends up coming to America after this terrible experience, losing everybody. The only thing he brings with him is his locket with Hui, his wife's face that he had made in like a gold locket around his neck that he never took off. So when he comes to America, he has like $50. He goes to Los Angeles and he gets a job in Chinatown helping refugees. He gets a call like from somebody who saw him at a wedding to audition for The Killing Fields. So he goes, and in the documentary, the Arthur Donks documentary, they show the audition, which is really beautiful. It's just him kind of improvising a scene,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really hard to do. Have you ever done that, like where they don't have a part and they have to improv?
Not like to audition for a part and I had to improvise. I mean, I've taken like improv classes, but it's not easy.
Mm-mm.
Especially if it's just you improvising yourself.
It's hard. It's really hard. But what he does is really amazing. And so you see like what he's going to bring to the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he, after 6 years of escaping this Holocaust, then he's on the red carpet at the Academy
Awards.
That's
so crazy.
I mean, it's like such an incredible, crazy story. So he spends his time after winning the award going on talks. He's still helping refugees to kind of like come into American life and helping them get jobs. People from Cambodia, it's all about helping his country kind of to come and reacclimate and find their community in America, which I think is really remarkable. And he's telling his story. He's going on those 10 a.m. morning talk shows in San Francisco, like people are talking, like it's not the news. It's like the show right after the news. That's kind of usually, it's like a locally syndicated show. I think in the 80s and 90s, that the sort of started to turn over, like these shows started to become like The View. It was before, okay. It was pre-View.
Got it.
So they hadn't really fully like realized that the entire country would be watching something. It was all like sort of local talk shows. And so he goes on, the people are talking in San Francisco, and he, you know, he's telling his story. And the way the Killing Fields of Dr. Hang Us Nor documentary goes, it's basically him. It looks like what I gained from it was that it was his lecture that he would give when he was going to these universities and going to these talk shows in different places, but also put to animation, put to archival footage, put to clips from him from the movie. It's a really, really beautifully done movie. But so, you know, he's telling his story to people, and, you know, he's doing well. He does a guest star on Miami Vice.
Oh.
He has like quite like an acting resume that's growing, and he has a gold Mercedes.
Oh, my God.
He still lives in a small apartment in Chinatown, and, you know, he had escaped Cambodia with his wife is dead. Most of his family's dead. They're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he escapes with his niece and sort of adopts her. His niece is Sophia. They live together in Chinatown. So on, let's get to the crime. So this is like the crazy thing of like, what an incredible life to survive so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what happened. This is like really terrible. On February 25th, 1996, he's coming home from a dinner that he was with Jack Ong, who was an actor, an activist, really, really sort of like very big Asian American, like Hollywood person
mm-hmm.
in the 80s. And he's coming home, and he gets into his parking garage and he's gunned down. And it's like,
what?
So it's so crazy. So Hang Us Nor is like murdered. He's just dead in the parking garage. And they go in his car and they look, and there's $3,000 in the back seat, and it's like a gold Mercedes. And they're like, "What happened?" Like, and everybody's kind of thinking, "This is Pol Pot." I mean, Pol Pot was angry because Hongus Nor is like telling all of the world about all of the terrible inhumanities that were brought about, you know, by this regime and winning awards for it. So, you know, everybody's like, they think it's Pol Pot. The Cambodian community is convinced that it's Pol Pot. You know, nobody can figure out what it is. And so they start to look around and they're looking at the evidence like, well, there's all this cash left behind. And the gold Mercedes not touched. But then his Rolex is missing. He had a $6,000 Rolex that he always wore. It's a gold Rolex. That's missing. And his locket with Hoy's picture is missing. And he never took that off.
Okay. Wow.
So they start thinking, was this a robbery? And then there was a lot of graffiti around the neighborhood where this happened. And they were looking and it was all OLB, which means Oriental Lazy Boys, which is a gang. I'm like,
what?
I'm like, really? That's a gang? I've never ever... Oh, there's a lot of reasons why I think that's just not real, but it's a real gang. It's an Oriental Lazy Boys.
What?
And I'm like, I've never encountered a lazy Asian. Have you? Do you know any lazy Asians? I don't know any.
I mean, I guess I know a few, but I don't, they would never be in a gang.
No.
You know what I mean?
Like, and they would never say they're Oriental.
No, they would never.
Oriental Lazy Boy, it's like, what? So... after everybody sort of like kind of exhausted the idea of this being a Pol Pot thing. So these three guys were arrested. They, were, I mean, it's just like, you know, they were gang members of the Oriental Lazy Boys, which to me is like,
that seems so fake. Weird. It doesn't sound real.
It sounds so fake to me. And I think that you can't really like, I hate that conspiracy theory is really, it's now it's a bad word.
Right.
To be a conspiracy theory now, I mean, it used to be honorable.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a conspiracy theorist and you'd be cool. Like you could believe in that kind of stuff. But now QAnon has ruined it for everybody.
Right. It used to be back in the day like, oh, I think the government might have tried to kill MLK. And now it's like crazy stuff.
Yeah. Now it's they're eating babies in the pizza place.
Yeah, yeah. Now it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Now it makes no sense and they've ruined everything. So they arrested three guys who they never found the locket.
Okay.
They could never figure out why the cash wasn't taken. The Mercedes was untouched. They could never, it's like, so one of them it was sentenced to life without parole. The other two were sentenced to like 50 plus years.
Okay.
And
are they
they've
still
appealed
alive?
Their cases. They're still alive. They're all still in prison. They've appealed their cases. So in the interview for Vice First documentary, Arthur Dong commented that those charged with Nor's murder, well, there were three trials. Each one of the defendants had a trial and there were convictions. They went through the appeals and they were denied. So it's crazy because at the tribunal for the Khmer Rouge, which happened in 2009, which finally the architects, with the exception of Pol Pot, who had already died, the architects and the sort of like ruling party behind all of this massacre were finally like brought to justice by Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys on trial, his name was Duke, said that Pol Pot had Dr. Hongus Nor killed.
Oh.
And they couldn't figure out like, well, why would he say, like, he had no reason to say that. Nobody accused him of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is in 2009. And the murder of Hongus Nor had happened in 1996. So why would he even bring that up? You know, this has no bearing on his sentence, but he's saying like, well, Pol Pot did it and still nobody could prove it or disprove it. And you know, these guys, three guys are still in prison. So Arthur Dong goes on to say that no one forced Duke to say what he did. No one even asked him. He was just describing the tactics Pol Pot used to get rid of his enemies. And he just included this comment about Hong Nor because he was talking about Pol Pot as if Pol Pot was Stalin getting rid of Trotsky.
Oh.
So We don't know. We don't know. It's still a mystery. But, you know, I wanted to do this episode because I wanted to talk about the great achievements of Dr. Hong Asnor. And, you know, he's part of Asian American Hollywood. We don't get to celebrate him.
I was like, I've never heard of this guy, and this is crazy. I have to watch the movie now.
You can watch it on Tubi.
I'm so excited to watch it on Tubi. This podcast is now sponsored by Tubi.
This sponsor and Febreze.
Yeah.
You'll have to watch a couple of don't try to fast forward or they'll start it again. But that is the story of Dr. Hong Asnor. And thank you so much, Irene. Where can people find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Irene_2. That's T-U. It's my last name. Or just go to my website, Google me. I don't know. You'll find me. Pretty easy.
You're so awesome. And I'm so glad that we got to share this time. Let's get out there. We'll stay alive.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
AAPI. Thank you for coming.
Of course.
Happy
AARP.
AARPI. It's great because we have a double header because it's like AAPI and then it's Pride.
Yes, I know. That's I love it. And my birthday is in April. So I get 3 months in a
hello.
Row.
Hello.
Excuse me.
Hello, Aries.
Yes.
Hello, Aries. Fiery. Come through, Aries. Come through, AAPI. Pride. Celebration time for Irene, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Today, we're highlighting the GoFundMe page for Chui Fong Ng. It's organized by her grandchildren, and we will link to it in our show notes. If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.